So we're looking at Parshas Yisro in the Meshech Chochma, and we're going to begin with Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Okay, Perek Yutes, Pasuk Yud Zayin. Vayisyatzvu b'tachtis ahor. Melamed, Gemara on Shabbos, famous Agadata Peches, Shekof aleim har kigigis. And Rabbi Simcha wants to give a new perspective on an old, very famous, popular statement in Chazal. Literally, God held the mountain over Bnei Yisrael. Pirush. The main concept here is what we call compulsion, meaning compelling. Something here was compelled upon them, was thrust upon them. Sheher Lahem, Kovod Hashem. Rabbi Meir Simcha is not going to take this Gemara literally. The concept that underlies the Gemara is more important to Rabbi Meir than is the actual physical, material vision of what might have gone on there. On a conceptual level, what underlies this statement of Chazal is that Klal Yisrael had no choice. They were forced to accept the Torah. What does that mean? God revealed His kavod b'hakitz, while they're awake. Normally, for example, a Navi, when he experiences a vision, he's asleep. But here, the people of Israel were b'hakitz, they were awake. U'behisgalus nifla'ah. The revelation was wondrous, was profound. Ad ki mamish batla b'chirasam. They were compelled. They had no choice. A person is born with freedom of choice, tiv'i, it's natural. And here, their natural sense of freedom of choice was gone. There was such an obvious revelation, there was no way of denying it. It was so undeniable. It's the truth right in front of your eyes. And Chazal say that at that point, Parcha Nishmasam, Yotza Nishmasam, Me'asogas Kvod Hashem. In other words, man is a hybrid, he's spirit and body. But at some point, if the Neshama, if the spirit of man becomes so powerful, it connects and communes with God on the most profound level, then the Neshama can't tolerate the body anymore. It has to separate itself from the physicality. The physicality represents finitude. The Neshama represents infinite spirituality, and there's no connection anymore, because here the spiritual element of man takes over to such an extent, it's so overwhelming that the neshama leaves the goof. And all this is because of the Hasogas Kvod Hashem, because of the perception of the glory of God. And now, if they're neshamos without a goof, hayu muchrochim kimalochim below hevdel. Their status was equal, their state of being was equal to that of the heavenly angels. V'ra'u k'kol ha'nivram toli rak b'kabbalas ha'Torah. They had a perception of the truth, and they realized that everything depends upon the Torah. Like Chazal say, that Bereishis bara Elokim, the world was created for Bereishis, for the Torah. So everything now hinges upon the Kabbalah Satorah. Everything that's created is not just physical material, but it's the will of God. And the will of God depends upon the Torah. We accept the Torah, we accept the will of God, then the universe exists. Amar Rava. This is another Gemara in Shabbos, in the same Agadah. Mikan Moda Rava La'oraisa. Moda is something when you are forced to sell something, or buy something, you could be moser modav. Means you tell the witnesses somewhere in the secret that you're about to enter into a deal that's compulsory and you have no interest in that deal. And if they sign such a document, then the deal is off. And the deal of Kabbalah Satorah now is off because we had no choice. It was not our freedom of choice. It was against our will because we had no choice, because we was so overwhelmed by the Kvod Hashem and the Hizgalus and the revelation and the truth in front of our eyes. Everything was so crystal clear, there was no choice. And if there's no choice, that's exactly what Moda is about. If you're forced into a deal, and you have no choice, that's called moda. Now Rabbi Meir Simcha has a question. We have a principle in which a person's actions, even if they are compelled and are forced upon him, are still valid. And this is based on a Gemara in Masechet Kiddushin and otherwise. Kofin bikarbonos. If a person refuses to bring his karbon and he's obligated to do so, we beat him up. We literally force him to do so. He's compelled. Anshi Yomar, until finally we beat him up. He says, Rotsani, yeah, I want to bring the karbon. But let's face the truth. Is this a real Kabbalah? Is this genuine? Imagine if I force you at gunpoint, or I beat you up, and I threaten to kill you. I'll pulverize you if you don't accept the following deal. And you say, Rotsani, yeah, I want it. You don't really want it. You just want to save your skin. You want to alleviate yourself of all the pain and the suffering. So how could it be that the Gemara tells us that if he refuses to bring a karbon, and a karbon has to be miratzon, right? The pasuk says at the beginning of Vayikra, Lirtzonchem tizbachu. So just because he enunciated the words Rotsani, I mean, that was perfunctory. That was just to save himself the pain. And here, Rav Meir Simcha introduces a Rambam in Hilchas Gerushin. In Gerushin, for a get, there are certain situations in which if a person, the husband, refuses to give the get, we can compel him to give the get. Again, once again, there's no such thing as a get without Ratzon. You know, the Rambam introduces in Hilchas Gerushin 10 conditions for the get to be chal, to be valid. One of them is Ritzono, it's got to be his Ratzon. And now we're going to beat him up? So the Rambam tells us in the second parak of Gerushin, does everybody know this Rambam?
No.
So we'll read the Rambam inside. The Rambam says, Misha hadin no sein shekofen oso legarish es ishto v'lo rotzo legarish. So the law, Halacha requires of him to divorce his wife. He refuses to do so. Then, Beis Din Shel Yisrael, a Jewish court, b'chol makom b'chol zman, anytime, any place, makin oso, they could beat him up, ad sheyomer rotzani. So the Rambam himself asks the obvious question, v'lama lo batel aget? I mean, if we say the Ratzon, his will and his consent is absolutely critical. In this case, he didn't concede. He didn't want to give the get. Harehu onus. He's forced against his will. He's being victimized. And the Rambam gives an answer, very complicated answer, very long answer. Says the Rambam, Ein omrim onus. We don't classify somebody as being forced. El b'misha nilchatz v'nidchak lasos dover she'eno mechuyev bo min haTorah. If a person is forced to sell something, and the Torah doesn't say whether he has to sell it or not, that coercion means that he doesn't have ratzon. He's called an onus. Avol misha tikfo yitzo. But if the Torah commands him to do something, and the Yetzer Hara prevents him from doing so, the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, presents a barrier and tries to convince him to be mevatel a mitzvah, to do an avera. So then we have to go back to square one. Really, since the Torah obligates him, that's where his will is. He wants to fulfill the Torah. There's an external pressure that's preventing him from fulfilling the Torah. Vehuka. And now we beat him up. Ad she'asa. Now who are we beating up over here? We think we're beating up the human being, right? The one who refused to do the mitzvah. But really, in truth, we're beating up the Yetzer Hara. Ad she'asa dover she'chayev lasos. Until we get to the point where his true will comes to the fore. His true will, which is now being prevented from coming to the fore by the Yetzer Hara, but we have to beat up the Yetzer Hara. Now his true will is, I have to do this mitzvah, I want to do this mitzvah. I have to stay far away from violating this avera, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. The huka ad she'asa dover she'chayev lasoso, she'nisrachik min dover she'asa lasoso, ein ze onus mimenu, that's not an onus. Hu onas es atzmo, meaning the yetzer from within is forcing him, b'dayto hara, with its evil inclination, But Me'achash, who wrote Salios be Yisrael, he definitely wants to be part of the Jewish people. And for Rotsu Lasos Kolat Mitzvah Sushachik Ben Averos, his true will is to fulfill the will of God and fulfill the mitzvahs and observe them and go far away from the Averos. But Yitzra Hu Detakvo, the Yetzer Hara within is forcing him. So he's really onus to the Yetzer Hara. Do you follow? His real will is to fulfill the will of God. The Yetzer Hara is making him into an onus, because the Yetzer Hara is putting in front of him such powerful barriers. That's tokfo. Tokfo means when I grab something away from you, when I overcome you and overwhelm you. So now the external forces of the Yetzer Hara, they are actually the ones who are tokef, they're the ones who's grabbing onto you.
Excuse me.
I'll just finish the Rambam. I just want to get to the end of the Rambam. This is all one long Rambam.
Okay.
So Kevan Shehukad Shetoshash Yetzer. So now we beat him up until we weaken the Yetzer. And then he declares, Rotzani is Kvargirish Litzono. Then his true will comes out to the fore.
Wouldn't this be true with any Avera that one might do? Don't we say that a Ruach Shtush comes across a person? So in general, a person wants to do the will of God or follow the Torah. But with any Avera, big or small,
correct,
it's the same scenario. Yeah?
Correct. And when we say that a person does a mitzvah because he was forced to do so, that's not so. He really wants to do the mitzvah. If you say he's forced to enter into a sale or any transaction that's not according to the Torah law, that's just something that's optional, then you can claim onus, I was forced to do so. But if you were being forced by the Yetzer Hara to violate the will of God, which is your true will, and now we beat up the Yetzer Hara, then your true will comes out to the fore, and you're not considered an onus. And the Rambam codifies this in Hilchas Gerushin with a big chiddush, because in Gerushin there's a separate halacha of Ratzon, and not only that, Gerushin is not a classic mitzvah. It's only a mitzvah in this particular case, because as the Rambam writes, we're talking about a case of, where does he say it? Where Bezdin says he has to give the get? Misha Din Nosen, right? The Din is that he has to give a get. And therefore we're going to be kofe his Yetzer Hara, beat up his Yetzer Hara, so that his true will will come to the fore, and he will do the mitzvah, he'll perform the mitzvah. In this case, he'll give the get. Now let's swing back to our beginning discussion. We said that kof aleim harki gigas, they were forced, so to speak, to accept the Torah. And Rava says that one could come along and say, modor rabba l'oraisa. You know, now I can object, I entered into this agreement, Nasa v'nishva, only under the compulsion, only under the kof aleim harki gigas. How could it be that that's called a valid Kabbalah? That my commitment is valid. It's not valid if I wasn't interested. I was just kof aleim. But the answer is, the kof aleim here is bringing out their true ratzon. What it means is that they really want to accept the Torah because that's the will of God. And anything that's preventing them from doing so has to be beaten up. You know, we have to take all those external barriers and impediments, and we have to just wipe them off the face of the earth. But certainly because of their seeing and perceiving the Kavod Hashem, that doesn't mean that they don't want to accept the Torah. On the contrary, they were so uplifted and inspired and overwhelmed by the beautiful Kavod Hashem that was the wonderful revelation that was revealed in front of their eyes. That's why their true will came to the fore. Now what Rav Meir Simcha doesn't do here for us is he doesn't come back to the statement of Rava. Rava said Mikan Modor Rabba L'Oraisa. I don't know how the Meshech Chochem is dealing with that. In fact, Rava says Hodor Kiblua B'Meach Hashverosh. I don't know if he has it here. Yeah, he has it here in the footnote. And in the time of Achashverosh, they accepted the Torah willingly. But in any event, whatever kind of kfiya of coercion was kof aleim harki gigas, Rav Meir Simcha says that is only a method to bring out that true will. Now, Rav Meir Simcha wants to claim that this Rambam that we just learned in Hilchas Gerushin, that we beat up a person in order that his Yetzer Hara should be subdued and his true genuine will should come to the fore, This is the Rambam Lishitaso. Lishitaso means the Rambam is very consistent with some other view that he propagated. And that's the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin. What happens over here? A person was forced to have a relationship with an erva. And the Torah in this case says that he's not allowed to give in. That's called Yeharig Val Yavar, because Arayos is one of the three cardinal sins. The Rambam wants to know what happens if he succumbed to this temptation, to this Avera, and instead of giving up his life, he was forced, so to speak, he was compelled to engage in this Gili Arayos. The Rambam says, Chayav Misa. In such a case, we're going to put him to death. And this is a gewaltige chiddush of the Rambam, because you and I would have said on Sue, since they forced him at gunpoint, he's an onus. And the Torah says, v'anar lo sasa dover, or onus rachmona patre. So the Rambam says, ein kishui el ledas. There's no way that they can force him to have this relationship with a woman unless he has some sort of involvement. You know, he has to, at some minimal level, he has to have das. And that's the Rambam. So the text of the Rambam, you'll see here in footnote number 3, Kol Misha Osa Dover Shechayom Alev Misas Bezdin Bi'ones Ein Bezdin Bi'misen Oso Afal Pi She Mitzvah She Harg Val Yavar V'Yaf Pi Shechil Asa Shem V'Onus Eino Nerag Shenemar V'Lanar Olos Asa Dover. So that's the Rambam in Perek Chof Halacha Beis. Zu azhara lebezin shelo yanshu es ha'onus. Then he has an halacha gimel ishan suat shebala erva. This is going to be the exception to the rule. Is chayv misus bezin she'en kishi el adas. So Meir Simcha wants to understand, why is it that in every avera we have a p'tur, we have an exception and an exemption based on onus, but not in the case of bala erva?
In all the cardinal sins,
if he violates it instead of giving up his life, is ein bezdin manishin also. But the only exception to that rule is gili arayos. Ubazek kasa behilchus soriator perkei alochedalim over velo nerag. In a case where he has to give up his life and he didn't do so, eino chayev. We cannot punish him. V'aksha over mitzvah seishal kiddush Hashem ayin shom v'taimo. The reason for the Rambam's distinction is because b'chol averos like chil Shabbos, avodah zarah, etc., im adam osei al yedei ones, he was compelled to do so. Ein ze asiyah mirotzon b'etzem adover. In other words, there's something external to him that's forcing him, but he has no will to do the action. The Torah gave him a challenge that he should overcome his, you know, life-saving situation, and instead of saving his own life, he should give up his life. He should sacrifice. Okay, so he's guilty of Chil Hashem. But as far as getting punished for the Aver itself, he was Mechal Shabbos, he worshipped an idol. Here he's an onus. Why? Because he didn't do it mirotzon. Raksibas hechrech ha'onesh mevio laso zebelo chefetz pnimi. His real true will, if not for the fact that someone put a gun to his head, was to fulfill the will of God, as we saw in the Rambam in Hilchos Gerushin. But rather something external that's forcing him to violate the will of God. In such a case, that's not his will, and therefore we cannot put him to death. Avol gabi erva, here's the exception. Ha'ishen is kasha, who ainu mitzad sha'osa zeh machmas pachad ha'onesh. There's an element here of desire, of will on the part of the man, above and beyond the fact that he's afraid of getting killed. So it's not just the pachad ha'onesh, or the pachad of ones, that ultimately compelled him to violate this isur. Rak, hu asiya mi hisragshus bechimum tavas ha'erva. At some point in time, he gets carried away with the passion of the moment and the excitement of being compelled for his own excitement's sake to do this avera, and therefore niskasha. And you can turn the page to the other side. Ubiyado, it should say biyado, the print is a little bit erased there. Ubiyado, he had the power, lisapek al tavoso, to overcome his desire, ulibli liskashos, to therefore make it impossible for this action to happen. Is therefore there's some element here of chafetz hatava that he really wants me chafetz hatava to do this action. Again, he never would have pursued this action if not for the onus, but the action itself at the end of the day, he could have avoided it and he didn't do so. The zenikra ratzon, this is enough of a will lischayev beyonsim, so that he's now chayev, will be punished as if he had done it with a full ratzon. I mean, the chiddush is gevaldig here. I mean, he didn't have a full ratzon. You know, if he was left to his druthers, he never would have had this immoral act. He did so primarily because he was honest, he was compelled, he was trying to save his own life. But nevertheless, there is an admixture of ratzon, and that ratzon crosses the boundary, crosses the bar of ratzon. It's enough of a ratzon, despite the onus element, that is a will that's independent of the pachad and the fear of whatever the ma'ayim, whatever the threat was. Is meser mi'ito yiras Hashem. At that moment in time, he puts the fear of God out of his radar screen, and he just simply acts on his own passion, based on his own desire. V'imkei mischamim b'tevel ha'erva. He's now very passionate about this erva, as if she was permitted to him. Right? If you have a relationship with a woman that you're permitted to, then we understand that you have a full ratzon and you have a kishui. But now he's talking about a woman who's prohibited, but he has a kishui, means that he's mischamim. and he gets passionate here in the same way he would if she was muteres. It's therefore, it's considered ratzon. Again, it's the lowest level of ratzon, sort of on the scale, but it registers. In Kain Gam Hocha, here too. Now here too, I think he means in the case of Kabbalah Satorah. Let's see if I'm right. In Kain Gam Hocha, here too, Sherotzon Nefesh HaYisraeli, the will of a Jewish soul, Note is inclined, Beteva by its nature, Bechefetz Nimrotz, HaPnimi, in his inner will, L'kayim Mitzvah Hashem, to fulfill the will of God. That's his real, true, genuine will. But the only problem is that Atzah Seyitzah Tokfolov. So he has an external force that's preventing him, putting a barrier, not allowing him to fulfill his inner will. Is Miyad Kshiyuka Makos Atzorios, if he will be beaten up, then Yusar Chefetz HaChomer V'Osa Maisa Shemagarish O Mevi Karv. Oh, he's talking about Gerishin and Karvon. So again, we're going to beat him up until he declares Rotzani. Why? Because we're just simply getting rid of that Yetzer that is preventing his will from coming through. And immediately when these cruel flagellations will beat him up, then the Chomer, the physicality, will be removed. And now he's going to do whatever he has to do, whatever he's supposed to do. He's going to bring a karbon, he's going to give the get. And that's the chefetz apnimi li'atzmius ha-mitzvah. He has an inner desire, a pure desire to do the mitzvah itself. That's called ratzon gom. So let's just summarize and see how Rav Meir Simcha puts two Rambams together.
I was going to say, you just asked, it's a bit of a paradox. And there is, on one hand, he's saying that the inner will of a Jew is always for this goodness. On the other hand, the case of Arias, he's saying that the inner will is not for good. Now, as you see, there's like a paradox here.
The thing is like this: if we beat up the Yetzirah, then his inner will come to the fore. If we don't beat up the Yetzirah, then what's going to happen is that he's going to have a tug of war inside, an internal tug of war. One side is pulling him towards Ratzon Hashem. The other side is pulling him towards Taiva, to fulfill his desires. Now he's in a choice decision. He has to make that decision. would he give in to the Yetzer Hara, then what he's saying is that I'm going to ignore the Ratzon Hashem for the sake of my taivus, for the sake of my desire. Sometimes what the halacha says is that it's so critical to get him to do what he has to do that we're going to step in, we're going to intervene, and we're going to beat up all those forces that are tugging him in that direction. Those are rare cases. Like, for example, in get, we were so critical that we get the get, or in carbon, it's so critical that he brings the carbon. In all these cases, we're going to step in and help him out. Instead of giving him the possibility of making the wrong choice and giving into his taiva, and let the Yetzer Hara overpower him and overwhelm him, what we're going to do is we're going to beat up the Yetzer Hara. Once we beat up the Yetzer Hara, then his true will comes to the fore. Again, if he asks me, would he get schar for this? Should we reward him? I don't know. I have my doubts. But the carbon is a carbon, and it's called ratzon. So that's a case where we beat up the Yetzer Hara. In the case of Gilui Arayos, he was faced with a choice decision. The will of God was that he should give up his life. And that would make him into an onus, because again, if we compare his inner will, which would really be to fulfill God's will, which means to give up his life, then the only reason he didn't do so is because of external onus. And if that be the case, the Rambam is faced with the problem, why does the halacha require that we put him to death? And here's where the Rambam says that since we have no way of salvaging, of saving him. In other words, the Ma'anes is very powerful, and we can't beat him up, so he's left to his druthers now. And the Torah believes that he can make a decision and overcome his Yetzer Hara in such a way that he won't have this kishui and he won't have this passion for the action. But if he fails to live up to that challenge, then he's considered ratzon. Again, as I said at the outset, it's a very sensitive, you know, tightrope that we're walking, because he's definitely an onus, and I'll prove it to you, because in a million years he never would have done this if not for the fact that someone put a gun to his head. But on the other hand, he does have a level of ratzon, and the Rambam proves it from the fact that he has a kishui. If he didn't have a kishui, the action would be impossible. So he must have had his chavamus. He let the better, you know, the worst part of him, the taiva to have this relationship, come to the fore, and he had the same taiva that he would have had if she would be muterislo. And that ratzon, again, it's a gewaldige chiddush, I never would have said it in a million years, is enough to cross the path, the threshold, and consider it as a ratzon.
Who is this individual? Does he say just generically, or is there a particular individual that he's focusing on?
Well, again, these are halakhic rules that would apply to anyone. You know, anyone in that situation who has to either give up his life as the Torah wants him to, or succumb. In all averus, we're going to say, well, he didn't have any participation whatsoever. There was no ratzon. It was purely acting out of onus. But in the case of erva, the Rambam says, here's the exception to the rule. So in other words, in avodah zarah, he has no interest in avodah zarah. There's no taiva, there's no hischamamus. He's not hot after avodah zarah. So this is pure onus, and if we can't punish him. Again, he's guilty of bittul esse, and the Rambam says he's mechalas Hashem. But to punish him for avodah zarah, we can't do, because there was an external onus. And if he would have left to his own ratzon, he never would have done this. But on the other hand, there's no admixture of ratzon whatsoever here. He's purely responding to onus. Not so in the case of Gilui Arayos. Here, he is personally involved in implementing this action. The Torah knows very well that he could have avoided it, but his taiva got the best of him, and that's when he's punished. Yeah.
Why do we call the onus external? I think the Yetzer Hara is very much an internal phenomenon.
Right, I'm using the term external. I don't think you'll see it in Rav Meir Simcha, so let's not blame him for Berzon. Okay. I'm just saying that I call it external because what I'm trying to suggest is that there's some force here that's not letting his inner will, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what is man? You know, where am I, so to speak?
Exactly.
Did you ever ask yourself that question? Where's the I? Is it in the brain? Is it in the heart?
Yes.
Is it the...
Who do you say
ask?
You said...
No, I'm saying...
I
ask myself this question.
Is that like Buber or something you're saying?
I don't know. I haven't read Buber in ages. You know, the last time I read I and Thou was about 50 years ago. And I'm not exaggerating. So I can't be held responsible for Buber. I'm just saying I ask myself very often the question, which is me? You know, is it my arm and my fingers? Well, Chas v'Shalom, if I didn't have my arm, I'd still be me. So where is the me? So the me is my ratzon, my inner will to fulfill God's will. That's the chiddush here of this whole presentation. However, why is it that that will is overwhelmed? In other words, why doesn't it come to fruition? Why is it that despite my inner, true, genuine will, the I of Azariah person that wants to do the will of God, why do I trip up so much? So that's why I call the Yetzer Hara external. The Ramban says that before the chet of Adam and Rishon, the Yetzer Hara was external. But after the Yetzer Das, it became internal. So I have this internal struggle now. And the Torah is saying, I'm going to put you into this, the Parashas Drachim, in which you can overcome the Yetzer Hara. Even though it's internal, your inner will can overcome and be tokef against the HR, but sometimes the HR gets too tough for you, or you get too lazy, or whatever, you can't put up a good fight. In those cases, you're held responsible. You're no longer an honors. Why? Because the Torah believes that you can connect to your inner will. Now, from that perspective, we should have come to the conclusion that any time a person is called upon by God, even if it means to make the ultimate sacrifice, he's going to be responsible for not overcoming his desire. Here's his desire for life. If you follow what I mean, he wants to survive. He wants nothing more than to continue to live. The Torah says he has to die, but he's not willing to die. So at that point, he should be held responsible. He should be held guilty. And here's where Meir Simchan, interpreting the Rambam, makes the following distinction between two elements, A and B. If you're talking about the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, if you're talking about Chil Hashem, he is guilty. But if you're talking about the Avera per se, which he was only motivated to do to save his own skin, that's called honest. The Halacha defines that as honest, and he will not be punished. Says the Rambam, the exception to the rule is if he participates almost as an active, shall I call it a decision? I think I could call it a decision. He made the decision that this Aver is attractive to him. And even though there are all sorts of factors from the outside, from the inside, that are pushing him towards that, and you might have said, well, those are mitigating circumstances, he has to be let off the hook. The answer is no. Because once he activates those inner feelings for the Avera, that is when the Torah says you're guilty. I mean, you could ask the following question. Why am I guilty of any Avera? Every Avera is only because of the Yetzer Hara. Why not say that any Avera I do, it's only because of others? It's never my true will. But the answer is, my true will is going to be challenged. That's what Bechira Chofshis is all about. They're going to be, call them, David, if you like, internal Yetzer Hara, call it external Yetzer Hara, whatever you want to call it, classify it this way or that way. But now, the Torah says you have the ability to win that battle. You're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to psych up or energize your ratzon apnimi, which every Jew is granted, in order to overcome these challenges. If you don't do so, you're punished. Unless you didn't have any element whatsoever of active participation in the Avera. If it was purely a response to onus, and there was no admixture whatsoever of your jumping in and doing this Avera out of your own will, then you are free of punishment. Again, you didn't overcome when the Torah said you're supposed to overcome. You're supposed to give up your life. You're guilty of Chil Hashem. But you will not be guilty of Chil Shabbos or Avodah Zarah. Why? Because there was no element whatsoever of I want to worship the Avodah Zarah. I want to violate the Shabbos. I'm not getting anything out of Avodah Zarah. I get no benefit. There's nothing internal that is motivating me to make a decision to violate the Shabbos. It's purely because of this life-threatening situation that I violated the Shabbos. Chil Hashem you're guilty of, but Chil Shabbos you're not guilty of. Unless it's an erva, because there's an active participation. Again, Rabbi Moshe, we would have to go over this 50 million times to get it down pat. I'm trying to do the best I can. Very profound analysis of Rav Meir Simcha. Let's just try to finish it up. L'Ramban, de Pligi Alei, Taman v'chidushav, v'sover she'ein zeh rotzon, v'vali gam hochelo nikra rotzon. The Ramban in his chidushim disagrees with the Rambam, and he says that even this even this kishui midas, which is some sort of passion that overtook his body, and he enjoyed the avod, the gilui arayos, even that doesn't pass the minimum, what's it called, the bar of ratzon, because he's not doing this because he wants to do it. That's not called ratzon. So here we have a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban. What is ratzon in the case of gilui arayos? On the one hand, he had to give up his life. He failed to do so. He said, I'm going to save my life, and I'm going to violate the gilui arayos. That doesn't bode well for him. On the other hand, he would never have done this in a million years. He's only doing it to save his skin. There's an external onus. On the third hand, there's what's called kishu midas. So the Rambam says that if we combine A and C, both the fact that the Torah requires of him to give up his life and not get involved in this avir, and C, the fact that there was some active participation, that's enough to be considered ratzon, and he's going to be put to death. The Ramban says no. True, he was obligated in this case to give up his life rather than engage in this avir, but he was forced to do so. This is not considered ratzon, and he's not punishable. Lefi ze muchrach debiskarvo ela erva dayna bechira belivavo shalolis kashos. In other words, the only way we can understand the Rambam is based on the following premise: that when he decided to have this relationship with the erva, he was still in a choice situation. He could have overcome all these forces within him of passion, and he would not be miskasha. V'lo aminin de yitzro hu de tokvo. We're not going to say that, you know what, there were forces that were beyond his control. No, even with the Yetzara, he could have overcome those forces. However, Be'isha, afilu al meres hanicho, is that's considered Yitzro Tochvo. What is Rav Meir Simcha bothered by? I can't see the number here for the footnote. Does it say 6? It's a little bit small for my eyes. I don't know. Maybe it's a 6. Anyway, this is a Gemara in Ksubis. Oh, yeah. This is number 6. And the case is the following. A married woman was raped, Nebuch. And somewhere in the middle of this action, she decided, let's go for it, you know? So the Gemara says that she's not liable at all. She's not a Asur al Baila. Again, in Cohen's situation is different. And the reason for that, says the Gemara, because Yitzra al Bisha, the Yitzhara took over her whole entity, her whole personality. So now we have a stira to Rav Meir Simcha. Rav Meir Simcha says that in the case of a man who at gunpoint was forced to have a relationship with this Erva, he's culpable. Why don't we say Yitzro Albisha? And the answer is that there's a concept called Yitzro Albisha, which means that there's no ability to make a choice. It's total, total onus. There's no admixture of ratzon whatsoever. Zero ratzon on the Richter scale. That's the case of a woman of Yitzro Albisha. What happens in that case is the woman's Yetzer puts her into a totally passive situation. She is being dragged by the Yetzer. She is an object, not a subject. In the case of gilui arayos, man, a male, M-A-L-E, is a subject. He is an active agent. The kisha is midas, and we don't believe that Yitzro Albisha would have absolutely forced his kishu. He had the ability to overcome that kishu, that taiva, that yetzahara, and therefore he's considered ratzon. Yeah, go ahead.
My knowledge is so limited, but when you talk about Shabbos and that's
about Zara, right?
When Shabbos, if he violates, that's his own doing, that no one else is involved in all the other examples.
No, when I said Shabbos, I apologize. What I meant to say is somebody puts a gun to his head and tells him, violate the Shabbos or I'll blow you to smithereens. In such a case, the Rambam says, if he violates the Shabbos. Let's say it was Shas Hashmad or whatever the different laws are, he had to give up his life, but instead he violated the Shabbos to save his life, we cannot punish him. He will not be Chayv Skila as a normal case, a regular case of Chil Shabbos. Why? Because he's considered Onus. Umesulak Mashin is Kashu Achronim. I want to answer a question of the Achronim, and we'll see soon who asks this Kasha. Apparently, it's another Behuda. Mehod Rabbalazu Mechayv al Kol Koach V'Koach. So let's read this here in footnote number 7. He says the following. The Nirulanius Daiti Sha'af Bechaili Mises Bezdin Lo Hisrubo Bitchila Vehisrubo Beemza Bia Af Da'adayin Hinevelis Berotzon Enechayevis Lishamet Mitachtov Olachzika Olachzika Bezroa Sheyisha Ashiyomasa Efer Hoever. Legabi dida onus. One second here. I'm just trying to figure out if I'm looking. First of all, I want to make sure I'm looking at the right footnote. I'm a little disappointed here in the footnote. Maybe it's my fault. I don't know, but he doesn't clarify this. Somehow there was Asra in the middle of the beer. So here's the difference between Ish and Isha. Just one second. Rabbi Eliezer B'Yavam Islam Ital D'Chayiv Al Kol Koach U'Koach. Is that meant for me?
No. I'm sorry.
No, I thought maybe there was a sign here that...
It's just midday where life is happening.
Oh, I see.
I'm sorry.
I'm trying to take you out of life, you know, into a world of thought, you know. The abstract world's here. All right, I'm going to just leave this. I'll tell you what I think is going on here. It seems that within one Maisa Bia, we can separate the Bia into various segments. If we give Masra continuously... every couple of seconds or so, he can be high of multiple malchus or multiple karbonos and onshim, and we don't say kfar yilbasha yitzra. But on the other hand, if let's say this woman was raped and in the middle of the rape we warned her and we gave her asra, and she has the possibility of maybe pushing him off at that point or something along that line, she's still not chayav. Why in the case of the male is he going to be chayv according to Rabbi Eliezer for every single koach, every single be'ila within that whole trigger, you know, that whole train? Every time we give him another asra, he's going to be chayv. But in the case of the neveles, even though we gave asra in the middle of the bia, since she didn't have asra at the beginning of the bia, then it's always considered onus. And the answer is because in her case, since she's passively overwhelmed by the Yetzer Hara, we can't expect anything else to happen. It's totally out of her hands. Masha'enkin, in the case of a man, he is considered to be activating his impulses and his desires and his kishri is constantly an active element. That's what I got out of that.
Being overwhelmed by the Yetzer Hara is a betur? I mean, it sounds like...
Again, I'm using the word overwhelmed in a bad way. What word would you use in English when you're thrown off a roof, so to speak? You know, it's not overwhelmed. That's not a good word. Because overwhelmed means like, you know,
right.
I was schlepped out, but I could have fought.
Right, exactly.
But what's the word that I need here, if you can help me? You know,
Captured.
Captured. Okay, let's use the word captured. She was captured in such a way that she doesn't have a chance in a lifetime to overcome that Yetzer Hara.
You make that distinction between a man and a woman. I would say you could argue the other.
I'll tell you why, because the woman is totally passive. You understand?
Well, that's
she's
a different
not
argument.
No, so I'm saying since she's totally passive, she has no ability to overcome those passive elements that are operating on her body. Do you understand what I mean? If you're active, then we could say, well, what are you activating? What button are you pressing? You're pressing the button of your tivus. You're pressing the button that keeps that kishri going and going. And every single koch, I can give you another hasra, because you're actively involved in pulsating your yetzer hara, your pleasures and your desires. She's just in a situation where she's basically has no choice. She's, as you say very well, she's captured. You know, again, you'd have to do a if you wanted to do a psychological analysis. Yeah. You know, you'd have to take psych. I don't even think it's 1.1. I mean, this is probably going to be a graduate course in psychology.
Does this play into the Esther Karkaola, like that issue as well? In other words,
I would think it's related. I'll tell you why, because Esther Karkaola is also an element in which any pleasure that she might have gotten from having a relationship with Ahasuerus is all a kind of passive situation.
Right,
in other words,
right.
She was like dragged into it, so to speak.
See, that sounds like it's coming from a different direction. That's not that you've been captured by the Yetzer Hara. It's that she has, like, emotionally, or, you know, that she's not involved in it. Isn't that, what is the answer of Esther Karkaola?
Esther Karkaola, well, it depends what the Gemara asks the Kashva, Esther Arayas Hav.
Right.
So we're not sure exactly what the Gemara means, because first of all, the Rishonim who say that a guy doesn't come on Zir Masusim Zubas doesn't come on the Gili Arayas. So what does Gemara mean here? Secondly, we're not even sure if she was married to Mordechai. She wasn't married to Mordechai. So we have kama v'kama kashas.
Right.
We don't understand what the Gemara means by Esther Gila Rais. So some say that Esther Gila Rais means the Gemara was asking about Shara Veris Befarhesia, not about Gila Rais. It wasn't Gila Rais, but it's Shara Veris Befarhesia. Now, if it's Shara Veris Befarhesia, then it could be the Karka Olam is a mitigating circumstance, because Shara Veis Befarhesia is the Machayev is not the Avera, the Machayev is the Chil Hashem. And if people realize that she was dragged into this against her will and she's being totally passive, then that mitigates the element of Chil Hashem.
I mean, who killed Sisra? What's his name?
Yael, I think it was.
So
yeah.
She was married and she went. She invited
him. Right, that's called Aver Lishma. That's really complicated. That makes this look easy. Because the Gemara does say that it was an Avera.
Aver Lishma.
But it was an Aver Lishma. I mean, go figure that one out. So he says, with Karl is at Timtza. Okay, you know what? I'm looking at the clock. Let's fast forward to another piece in Rav Meir Simcha. Because I think we did whatever we could here, and that's good. Just one second. Perek Chav Pasuk Aleph. Do you have that? It should be on the same page that we just got up to. We just flipped onto on the left column. Vaydaber Elokim es kol advarim ha'elu le'mar. Rameh Simcha wants to make a distinction between this word Leymar in this context, which is the opening verse introducing the Aseres HaDibros, as opposed to Leymar in the rest of the Torah. Shashem Tziva Lemosha Leymar Li Yisrael. In general, the word Leymar means God says, I mandate you to transmit what I'm saying to you now to the people of Israel. Hashem can here, shall you medaber el kol Yisrael. So Rav Meir Simcha has a problem. How could the Torah use the word Leymar when it's talking directly to the people of Israel? Lachain nirek moshe kosev a Rambam, shekol ikrei akabolah hu eino min hamuftim. Muftim has to do with the word niflos, or shall we say miraculous signs. Shekol amami mitzad zeh yesh belibenu delphi. Anyone who believes in God because of these signs these miraculous signs, he doesn't really have a full belief. Rak mitzad sheshesh meos elef avoseinu hema edim ne'monim sheigiu letachlis hanavu avarol kvod Hashem v'shomu asiyas hadvar eseres hadvar. The basis of our faith is not miracles. It's the basis of our faith is that 600,000 of our forefathers, who are trustable witnesses, testified to the fact that they achieved the ultimate level of prophecy. They saw with their eyes, Kvod Hashem. They heard with their ears the Aseres HaDibros directly from God. That is what our belief is all about. Vehema minachile hakabola dar dar. They're the ones who are manchil, to bequeath or transmit the Kabbalah from one generation to the next generation, and that's what it means. Sha'al avicha v'yagedcha. So when it says here in the pasuk, "Vaydaber Elokim eskol advar meilu lemar," what does the word lemar mean? Hainu shekol Yisrael ashomim yomru libneihem ubnei bneihem ad eis kates. The word lemar is not as God speaking to Moshe, you know, pass it on to the people, but God is telling the people, listen carefully, because what you're going to listen to, what you're going to hear, what you're going to see, is going to be the basis for the belief in God throughout all the generations. So lemar means make sure to get the full experience of Matan Torah, of the Aseres HaDibros, and pass that on to the next generation and the one afterward, Ad in Kates, until the end of days. Mitzad Har Sinai v'Aseres HaDibros. Now let's fast forward to Anochi. Do you have this Perikov Pasuk Beis? He quotes a Gemara in Shabbos, and it says here that it's in Shabbos on Kuf Ches. I wonder if I could ask you a favor just to find this for me. I don't know. It's probably here. I need more time. Shabbos Kuf Ches. I'll read to you the Gemara. In fact, the Torah Tmima has this Gemara here. He also says Shabbos Kuf Ches. So it's got to be there. I just don't know where it is. So what does it say in Shabbos Kuf Ches? The Gemara says, do you have it?
We're looking for the Amira and the Imak Siva.
Yeah, exactly. This is called Minayin Lenotrikin Min HaTorah. Right? Notrikin means that you take the first letter, you take the letters of a word, and each letter becomes the first letter of a word. And the Gemara says that, Rabbi Yochanan says that, Minayin Lelashin Notrikin Min HaTorah, Rabbi Yochanan says, Anochi, from the word Anochi. And for some reason I'm having trouble finding it, but the Torah Tmima has it. I'll read it to you from the Torah Tmima because I don't have the Gemara. Omer Rabbi Yochanan, minayin l'loshen notrikin min haTorah. What is the source for notrikin? And he says, shenemar anochi Hashem Elokecha, anochi notrikin. I don't know why I'm having so much trouble
here either.
You know, I would have told you it was an error.
Right, that's
here.
In two places.
But I find it here also in the Torah Tmim. Right. They both made the same mistake.
It's strange because it would be quoted in the Psukim on the side.
Right.
It's not, and I just went through the Gemara.
Right.
I don't see it.
Right.
I don't see it. Is it Amud Beis?
Maybe it's on Amud Beis, and they both made that mistake, which
right.
is possible.
Let's see.
But I'll tell you why I think it's on a different page entirely.
Yeah, there's no possibility.
You know why I think so? Because take a look in the brackets. It says Perikah Bonin.
So that's not
Perikah Bona is the 12th parak. And Kuf Ches, I think, is in the what,
yes,
the 17th parak?
Shmona Shvatzim.
I don't know. Oh, the 14th parak. So you have to go back to Prokim. Maybe you'll find it there.
In which daf?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so that I can't do.
it's probably Kuf Beis or Kuf Gimel, Kuf Dalet. One of those three daf. That's what I would say. Because
right.
That's where the Gemara goes to Yagadat of the Osios. You know how
right, the Osios, yeah. You can look at the.
But I don't know. Anyway,
all right.
Let's just leave it. I'll read it to you because we don't have too much time. So what does Anochi stand for? Ana Nafshi
right.
Ksivas Yavis.
Mm-hmm.
Now what does that mean? It's a little bit of Aramaic to me. And he says here the Torah Tmima, Yesh Lomar, Deromes, he's alluding to the Gemara at the end of Makkos. The Gemara says that Kol Aseres HaDibros V'Tzivuyei HaTorah Shamu Yisrael Me'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, all of the Tzivuyim of the Torah were heard by Klal Yisrael from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'raka nochi v'lo yiyah shamu mipi ha'gvura, and all the other mitzvahs they heard al yidei Moshe. V'zeu sha'amar di anochi, meaning this first of the ases ha'divus anochi, yahivna, I gave it to you, I transmitted it to you, ana binafshoi, with my nefesh, I guess it means somehow direct communication. Rabbanon Amri, the Rabbanon have a different notrikin. Amira Neima Ksiva Yahivna. Romans the Mashakas of Lamala, Mala Satora, Drachel Dachinon, Vichon the Sivo says Shalom. Ika the Amri, Anochi Lamafreya. We're going to take the four letters of Anochi and we're going to read them backwards. So we're going to start with the Yud. Yahivna Ksiva Ne'emonim Amoreha. Yeshlomer says the Tartmima de Romes Lemashakasa Vimala Satora Vieye Etzlo Imun. So it's all about Imun, meaning we have total faith in the Torah. Umasharo Chazal Bechol Jose Lidros Milas Anoki Yeshlomer Pi Hamavur Bemejesh Rabba De Milazu Enemi Loshin Kodesh Rashmi Loshon Mitzri. Wow. That's pretty wild. Now, in the few minutes that we have here, at least we'll get started on Rabbeinu Simcha. He's trying to figure out why do we find all these different shitos in the Gemara about how to interpret the word Anochi and make it into a notriku. Nira de pligi baha de pligi amaroi begitin. Now, this sugya that he's quoting in Gitin is one of the most challenging sugyas from a philosophical point of view. There are two deists as to whether Torah, Megillah, was given in stages. You know, every parsha where Moshe Rabbeinu has, there's an episode, you know, there's the Man, and then there's the parsha of the Aser. Every parsha was given at a different time, and only at the end of the 40 years, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu went through all the parshias and sewed them up together, so to speak. O Torah Chasuma Nitna. The Torah was only given at the end of the 40 years. This takes us back to the first shita. Just one second. No, I mean the first shita of the Rabbanan, right? First we had Rabbi Yochanan, then we have the Rabbanan Amira Ne'ima. Now, what is the connection here between Megillah Nitna and Amira Ne'ima? Shekol Amira Bifrat Ksiva. Do you see where the Netrikan says Amira Ne'ima Ksiva? So Amira Ne'ima is going on each Amira, and it's called Ne'ima, it's beautiful, it's lovely, Ksiva, and it's written. And then Yahivna. So this is called Megillah. Each Amira is a separate entity, and it's written in the Torah. Moshe Kosval HaSefer B'dyo V'Yahivna, and he gave it, L'vnei Yisrael. Believe it or not, that Torah. So this is at the end, after Moshe Rabbeinu attaches and integrates all these different sections into one, then he teaches the Torah as a whole. Avoman de'omar Torah chasuma nitna. Then we have to start with Yahivna, right? Ika diamri lemafreya. Lemafreya means we have to start from the Yud, and that means Yahivna. She nitna lebnei Yisrael. She takev shenemer lemoshe mipi agvura. Nemro lebnei Yisrael. Just one second. This is called Torah chasuma nitna. Just one second. I lost my trend over here. So he quotes in number three, Chasuma Nitna, Lo Nichtava Ad Sof Arboim. Only at the end of the 40 years was it committed to writing. Lacha Shenemu Kol Parshas Kulon. So every parsha was transmitted in its time. And that's the historical nature of the Torah. But the actual chasima, the ksiva, was only at the end of the 40 years. So techev shenemra mipi agvur nemra, whatever he heard from the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he passed on to Bnei Yisrael, like Parshas Nachlis, Parshas Tzitzis, and so forth. But the ksiva was only at the end. So that's Yehivna. Yehivna means that Moshe Rabbeinu gave over the Torah that he heard, and that's over the course of 40 years, piecemeal. But then ksiva, then at the end of the 40 years there was ksiva, and that's called chasuma nitna. V'afal pisha nitru achri isman rab miyom shenem v'yagvura nemonim amareo. Why do the Rabbanim say nemorim? The nun and the aleph is nemorim amareo, to tell you that even though many years passed since Moshe Rabbeinu had actually transmitted this Torah, but nevertheless you can rely on Hashem. There was no shinui, there was no giron, there was nothing that Moshe Rabbeinu added midaito. Okay, then, so we'll call it a day, because it's pretty much it should be close to 3. I don't know. I don't want to keep you too long, and then I'm sort of a little bit.
Akadosh Baruch Hu gave some of the Torah at the end of their journey in the Midbar.
Well, it could. There are two possibilities. Either there was that last piece at the end that he gave, or he gave the entire Torah at the end. Those are the two opinions.
No, they left in Mitzrayim and they came to Har Sinai and received the Torah.
Right.
So,